All right, so the Shear is sponsored by Mark Friedman. For anything?
an honor of Rabbi Weingarten.
Oh, thank you.
All right, okay. There you go.
Okay. All right, so we are on Daf Dalet Amud Beis, where it says, let's just go back a little bit because of the fact that it's been like a month. It says Itmar, where it says Itmar, right? So it's like basically two lines above, three lines above where the wide lines start. Right, so we see three lines above from where the wide lines start over, right over here. Daf Dalet Amud Beis. I think, yeah. No, yeah, you are on the right. You're on the right page. Itmar, where is the Itmar? Right here. Okay. So we will.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So Itmar, Shnei Yamim Tovim Shel Galius. The question that bothers every single person, basically. And the problem is there aren't really so many good answers. That's the problem. Anyways, 2 days of Yontif. Right, Rav Amar Nolda Bezeh Muteres Bezeh, Rav Asi Amar Nolda Bezeh Asura Bezeh. So there's a machlokas between Rav and Rav Asi. Rav says that an egg that is born on the first day of Yontif is mutter on the second day of Yontif, and Rav Asi says an egg that is born on the first day of Yontif is aser on the second day of Yontif. Why does Rav Asi say that it's aser on the second day of Yontif? So Lema Kesava Rav Asi Kedusha Achasi. So maybe Rav Asi feels that the 2 days of Yontif, that the people who observe 2 days of Yontif are not observing it because there is a suffix, because they are unclear which day is the real Yontif. It's because the Gezerah, the way it was formulated was, is that it's going to be one long day of Yontif. So that seems to be, that's why the egg is Asr on the second day, because we don't say that. That idea of, well, one day is chol, one day is a weekday, and therefore the egg is either, you know, either it was born on a weekday or the next day is a weekday, and therefore you can eat it.
According to that opinion, you don't hold that here. What if someone forgot to make an error before the holiday of Thursday and went over to Friday when they went to prepare for Shabbos? There's an answer that you could do it on tonight. If this day is the...
Right, so it's a different case.
But the same thing applied across the board. It's Kedusha Achat, in which case.
But we're gonna reject this anyway. So I guess with that assumption, yeah. But we're gonna reject it right now.
Okay.
So the Gemara says, does Rav Asi really feel that 2 days of Yontif? It's not that one day is the real Yontif and one day is a weekday, and we just don't know which one is the real day. Is that really true? Is it really that he holds? So he doesn't hold that. Is it really that he holds that it's one long Kedusha, one long holy day? In other words, that when they established the Takana. Right, for Yontif, they didn't make it, again, like I said before, that it's one day is Yontif, one day is Chol, we just don't know which, so we have both days being Yontif. But really, one of them is Chol. No, when they made the Takana, it was one long day of Yontif, right? That basically, the 2 days are just one day of Yontif. Is that really true? But Rav Asi would recite Havdalah at the end of the first day of Yontif. So what does that show? It shows that he didn't really feel that it was one long day of one long holiness. Because otherwise, right, if it was one day of one long holiness, then he would not recite Havdalah. So from the fact that he recited Havdalah at the end of the first day of Yontif, it shows that the reason why you have 2 days is because there's just a suffix. It's unclear which day is the real Yontif. But it's not that it's one long holiness. So the Gemara says, no, Rav Asi svuka misveka leva avid hachal lechumra v'hachal lechumra. So the Gemara ultimately says like this: Rav Asi, he wasn't sure. We know that there are 2 days of Yontif. What's the reason? Is it because it's one long day, or is it because no, one of the days is actually a weekday? We just don't know which. So since he was unclear about which possibility is right, he basically operated stringently in both situations. In other words, in terms of Havdalah. He made Havdalah after the first day. He made Havdalah after the first day because maybe the first day is the real day and the second day is not.
He's being consistent.
Right? No, but he's just going stringently in both ways.
Is he consistent?
It's consistent, but it's the opposites. In other words, in terms of Havdalah, right? So he wants to be machmir. Maybe it's not one long day. So let's make Havdalah after the first day.
Right.
And in terms of the egg, no, maybe it is one long day. So let's say the egg is usher on the second day.
Then he should also do Havdalah again on the second day.
Right, so he probably did. But in terms of him being consistent, it's consistent that he's stringent, but he's really stringent in opposite ways. In other words, if it's only one day of Yontif and the other day is just not really like Yontif, so then you make Havdalah. So that's why he makes Havdalah.
He's consistently inconsistent.
He's consistently right.
Which do you say first, Havdalah or Kiddush?
So you'd say Havdalah first. Yeah. Well, right. What's the gear stuff is? I don't know. Okay, but you'd make Havdalah first, of course, and then you'd make Kiddush, because you have to say the day ends.
Unless you put it into the Kiddush.
Right, so I'm not sure what he exactly did. Right. it wasn't in the Art Scroll Chumashim, well, in the Art Scroll Sidurim.
He put it into the Kiddush. And the Kiddush comes before him.
Right, I guess maybe it was in the Kiddush. I don't know. Okay. But anyway, so that's basically it. So it's not clear. So again, it's not that he definitively holds that the 2 days, why is the Egg Usher on the second day? It's not because of the fact that he for sure holds that 2 days of Yontif is just one long holiness. That's not true. He's misupak, he doesn't know, so therefore he just says, okay, let's play it safe and say the egg is usher on the second day. But it's clear that he doesn't necessarily hold that as a fact, that it's one long day, because he makes Havdalah between day one and day two. Okay. So, Amar Rav Zeira, Kavosei de Rav Asi Mistavra. So Rav Zeira says that it's logical to assume like Rav Asi. What does that mean? It's logical to assume like Rav Asi that the egg should be usser on the second day of Yontif, right? An egg that's born on the first day should be usser on the second day of Yontif. Why? The ha'idno yudinan v'kaviya diyarcha v'kavdinan trei yomei. So it's like this. Nowadays we know which day is Yontif. Is Yontif, right? We know which day was Rosh Chodesh, and therefore we know which day is Yontif, right? So let's say the first day is Yontif. So if the first day, if we know for a fact that the first day is Yontif, right, why do we have a second day of Yontif? So it obviously is that when they make, it's not because of a suffix. It's not that we don't know.
Is it a minhag avotenu?
Right, exactly. That's basically what it is. It's, they made a rule, right, that even if it will be that we'll figure out, right? In other words, because what was the problem? The problem was that there are areas that are far away from Beis Din, and they won't know which day was Rosh Chodesh, and therefore they won't know which day is Yontif. But so they said those people have to keep 2 days of Yontif. But did they say that as unless they find out, or is it no? Even if they find out, we just make a general rule that they always have to keep 2 days of Yontif. So from the fact that nowadays we know which day is the real day of Yontif, and yet we still have to keep 2 days, it shows that they just said no. As a fact, they have to always keep 2 days of Yontif. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it's logical to say that that's one long holiness, and that the egg that's born on the first day should still be usher on the second day. So Rav Zeira says that Rav Asi is more logical. So Abaye now says the opposite. Amar Abaye kavase de Rav Mistavra. Rav said what? Rav said that either way you're keeping 2 days of Yontif. Is it because we're just not sure? Or is it because, no, we just made a general rule that you always have to keep 2 days? That's basically the crux of the argument. So Abaye said that Rav makes more sense. That really, we're keeping 2 days. Why? Because we just don't know. Right? That's what he says. Because we just don't know. So we just say, but if we would know, so then we'd really only keep 1 day. We'll see. It's going to develop, right? So we say that the egg is going to be mutter, is going to be permitted on the second day of Yontif, because really it's not one long holiness. It's really just 1 day is the real day, and we just keep 2 days because we don't know which day is the real day. But as we said, mimanov shach, which means either way, the egg should be mutter on the second day, because if the first day is the real day, right, so then the second day is a weekday. And if the first day was a weekday and the second day is a real day, that means the egg was born on a weekday. So either way, the egg should be mutter on the second day. It should be permitted on the second day. So Abaye says that Rav makes more sense, that the egg should be permitted on the second day, from this Mishnah, which we learned together on Rosh Hashanah. Titnan, Birishona hayu masi'in masa'os. So initially, the way, as we learned together on Rosh Hashanah, the way that they would inform the people which day was Rosh Chodesh, right, was the last, is Rosh Chodesh on the 30th day of the month, or is it on the 31st? So if it's on the 30th day of the month, that means that the last month was chaser. It means it was a shorter month, right? And if it's on the 31st day, it means that the last month was 30 full days. It means it was male, it was a full month. So how would they tell the people which day was Rosh Chodesh? Is it on the 30th day or on the 31st day? So they would light bonfires. And that would signal to the people, they had a whole system that would signal to the people which day was the real day of Rosh Chodesh. And therefore, you would know which day is the real day of Yontif. In other words, if you know Rosh Chodesh, let's say, is on a Monday, then you know which day is Yontif, like 15 days later, right? Let's say, in terms of, or 14 and a half days later in terms of Pesach, right? If you know that Rosh Chodesh is on a Tuesday, then you know it's that Pesach is the next day after that, right? Okay, so Mishikilkalu Hakutim Hiskinu Shayu Shluchim Yotzim. So what happened, as we learned again on Rosh Hashanah, so what happened was is that there were these kutim who were basically did not believe in Torah Shabbat Pah. They did not believe in the oral law. So since they didn't believe in the oral law, they didn't necessarily believe in all the things that the rabbis did. So therefore, what they did is they would mess up the system. They would just light the bonfires at random times so that people would think it's Rosh Chodesh and it wasn't Rosh Chodesh. They basically just messed up the system, and therefore they couldn't rely on the bonfire system anymore. So what did they do? They sent out messengers. The problem is, sending out messengers is not as effective because it takes much, much longer. The bonfire system really was very quick. You light it on one mountain, then 15 miles away they see the fire and they light it on their mountain, and you know, 15 miles away they see it and they light it on their mountain, and it goes very quickly. From there, in a few hours, you can basically say from Israel to Bavel that it's Rosh Chodesh. You could tell them right away. Sending out messengers, they have to ride on a horse that distance. It takes much, much, much longer. So they decided they're going to send out messengers. They have no choice because of the fact that the Kutim messed up the bonfire system. Right? So therefore, since they send out messengers, there's a limit how far the messengers can go. So places that are further than the area that the messengers go always keep 2 days of Yontif. Right? Because they don't know which day is Rosh Chodesh. So they automatically always just keep 2 days of Yontif. Right? So what's the Diuk? What's the inference? The inference is like this. V'ilu batlu hakutim avdina chariyom. Why do they keep 2 days? Because we can't use the bonfire system. Because the kutim messed it up. The implication being, if we would figure out a way to let them know which day is Rosh Chodesh, then they wouldn't keep 2 days anymore of Yontif. So therefore, the egg should be mutter on the second day of Yontif. Right?
We're arguing against...
In other words... In Achanami, at this point in time, we haven't figured out a way to for sure let them know Rosh Chodesh. But they're only keeping 2 days because it's a suffix which day is Rosh Chodesh. So yes, they keep the second day, but it's not really holy. It's just they don't know. So therefore, the egg, at least, which is born on the first day, should become mutter on the second day. So the Gemara says like this. Right?
So you could say that there would be parts of Israel that the Shulchan could not reach and still hold, there would have to be 2 days even though...
Well, and it wouldn't necessarily be in Israel, it would be a little bit further out, but, right, there would be places, but they're not holding, right, so as the Gemara says right now, right, V'hecha d'matu Shulchan avdiru chadayom, v'hashu yadina b'kviya yirchur, my time avdina treyuma. Right, so this is a question. So the Gemara says like this. So the Gemara says... The places that the messengers reach only keep 1 day of Yontif, because they know which day is Rosh Chodesh, therefore they know which day is Yontif, so therefore they only keep 1 day of Yontif. Right? But the assumption is what? But the assumption is the only reason they're keeping 2 days of Yontif further out is because they don't know which day is Rosh Chodesh. But now that we have a calendar which basically says which day is the real Rosh Chodesh, why are those people keeping 2 days? So we say, right, that's the Gemara's question. Right? So the Gemara says, Mishum Deshalchum Mitam, because they sent from Eretz Yisrael, He's Haru B'minigav Seichem. This is what you were saying, Steve. B'yadeichem, Dezim Degazru Machos Akzer, Vasa the Kukalei. So basically, they sent a message from Israel saying, even though now you have a calendar and you know which day is Rosh Chodesh, therefore you know which day is really Yontif. That means the first day is Yontif and not the second day. Right? So you know everything that's going on. So you shouldn't be keeping a second day of Yontif anymore. Why are you keeping a second day? Because maybe there'll be a time when people won't be able to learn Torah. They won't be able to figure out, the calendar for the next 10 years, right? Or like, they won't be able to figure out the calendar when the calendar runs out. And what will happen is people will just still keep 1 day, but that won't be correct anymore because they won't know which day was Rosh Chodesh, and therefore they won't know which day is really going to be Yontif. In other words, let's say, for example, there's a nuclear explosion or something, and there's no way to communicate anymore. So the people are just going to be like, oh, we always kept 1 day, so we'll keep 1 day now. But that's not true because they don't know which day is the right day. So they told them, even though officially now you know, at this point in time, you have a calendar and you know which day is the right day, Just keep 2 days, because it might happen that you're not going to be able to know anymore. You're not going to have the calendar, and therefore you're going to come to mess yourself over.
But they could get the calendar from Eretz Yisrael. No, so it would take 2 weeks.
So they assume that. Let's say you're right. There's a destruction, as Rosie's saying, that there's some kind of destruction, right? Or that they're not allowed to learn Torah and they can't figure out which is the correct day. Let's say Israel can't figure out which is the correct day, right? So at least the people who are far out, who always kept 2 days, let's have them continue to keep 2 days. Again, but they're not keeping 2 days because it's one long holiness. They're keeping 2 days just because, really, the second day is not holy, just because we're worried that it might a situation might arise where they don't know which day is Rosh Chodesh. Basically, at the end of the day, either way, you keep 2 days of Yontif. Either way, you keep 2 days of Yontif. The question is, why? Is it because it's one long holiness? Right, and no matter if we know the calendar or not, it's always just going to be one long day of holiness, and that means that the egg that's born on the first day is usher on the second day. That is basically the opinion of Rav Asi. Or no, they keep 2 days, but they're keeping 2 days just because out of some, not because of the fact that we officially declare that it's one long holiness. It's not one long holiness. It's just that they have to keep 2 days because of some problem that might arise in the future. And in that situation, since the second day is not really holy, or the first day is not really holy. Either way, one day is not really holy, so therefore, on the second day, the egg should be permitted. Right? So it's a little bit tricky, because at the end of the day, you keep 2 days of Yontif either way. It's just, why are you keeping those 2 days? Okay, good. Itmar. Shnei yamim tovim shel Rosh Hashanah, Rav Shmuel, de'amar trevayah, nol de'bazeh, asur bazeh. So, we know that Yontif, right, the real reason, right, at the end of the day, what do we paskin? Right, so we paskin that an egg that is born on the first day is permitted on the second day of Yontif. Why? Because we really hold exactly what you said, Steve, that really one day is not holy. We keep 2 days because we're worried that something's going to happen and we're going to get messed up and we're not going to know which day was Rosh Chodesh and therefore we're not going to know which day is Yontif. But really one day is not holy, so therefore the egg on the second day is going to be permitted because for Mimanoshach, either way. Why? If the first day wasn't really Yontif, that means that it wasn't born. The egg wasn't born on Yontif. And if the second day isn't really Yontif, so yeah, the egg was born on Yontif, but the second day is a weekday, so you're allowed to eat it on a weekday. Fine.
What about...
But Rosh Hashanah, though, is... One second. Rosh Hashanah is going to be different, right? Rosh Hashanah, even if you're going to say that by Yontif, one day is not holy, Rosh Hashanah, we're going to say that it's one long holiness. Yeah.
You just asked me.
Okay, come on. So how do we know this? Because there's a Mishnah that says like this. That's why it's important to learn Mishnayos. B'rishona hayu mekablim edes hachoresh kol hayom kulo. So initially, this is what would happen. We know that at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the way they would sanctify the new moon, right, is based on Edim, witnesses, coming and saying, we saw the moon and today is Rosh Chodesh. Okay, so there's only one holiday that actually falls out on Rosh Chodesh. That is Rosh Hashanah, obviously. All the other ones, Rosh Chodesh falls out, and then two weeks later, there's a holiday. Rosh Hashanah, though, is Rosh Chodesh, and it's also Rosh Hashanah. So, initially, they would accept on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, Edom the whole day. In other words, they would assume the first day, they would start off the day keeping it holy, right? Rosh Hashanah, the first day of Rosh Hashanah. They would start off the day keeping it holy, that they assume it's Rosh Hashanah. And they would wait for Edom to come. And even if Edom came 5 minutes before the day ended, so they'd say, we were right, today is Rosh Hashanah, tomorrow is a weekday. That's what they did initially. Now, as long as Edom came at some point in the day and said that today is the real day, so then they knew today is Rosh Hashanah, that means tomorrow is a weekday, and therefore there's no second day of Rosh Hashanah.
So what do they do? They talk about the shear. What about the Musaf offering for Rosh Hashanah?
So, assumingly, they brought it out tonight, probably.
It was the second day?
No, the first day. We're talking about the first day right now.
Right.
The
first day. They made him just before Mincha. And then Ben Abayim is the last of the...
So, we'll see. Let's get to that. Okay. So, that's what it always used to be. In other words, they start off the night. We're assuming today's Rosh Hashanah.
No Malacha.
You can't do anything. Today's Rosh Hashanah. Davin, whatever. Do all your things. Bring the Korbanos. And they hope that the witnesses will come and say that today and validate their assumption. If witnesses, let's say, technically don't come, so that means today wasn't Rosh Hashanah. That means that the next day is also Rosh Hashanah, because the next day is the real day, right?
And you're going to bring Cholin Lazaro the first day, possibly.
Right, I guess they would do it out tonight, right?
Where do they bring it?
Right, that was always an issue. In other words, if they come 5 minutes before, how are they going to have time to bring the korbanos? Fine.
They brought the korbanos anyway. They brought it just like they declared the first day, Rosh Hashanah.
Right, so that's basically what's going to be the answer. The answer is that they basically made it that the first day is always Rosh Hashanah, even if the Edom don't basically come.
But then they don't have the second day.
So we'll see. Let's see. So what does the Gemara say? So Pamachas Nishtohu Edom Lavo Beniskaku Levim Bashir. So what happened? So one time, it was Rosh Hashanah. They were assuming it's Rosh Hashanah. It's the first day of Rosh Hashanah. And they're waiting, and they're waiting, and they're like treating it like Rosh Hashanah, and the Edom do not come. The witnesses do not come. Right? So once, it's already very, very late in the day, so they're bringing the Korban Shel Bein Arbaim, the Tamid of Bein Arbaim, which is the Korban that's offered every single day in the afternoon. And since the Edom haven't come, it's only 5 minutes before the end of the day, which Shir Shel Yom do they say when they bring the Korban Tamid Shel Bein Arbaim? So if it was Rosh Hashanah, if the eight witnesses had come already, they would have sung a song for Rosh Hashanah. Since the witnesses, they're like, the witnesses are not coming. There's only 5 minutes left of the day. So they sing the Shir Shel Yom of a weekday. Right? Because the assumption is, we were wrong. Today wasn't actually Rosh Hashanah. Tomorrow's really Rosh Hashanah. So let's sing the weekday song for today. So what happens? But then 2 minutes later, witnesses show up. So basically they messed up. In other words, they sang the shear of a weekday, but it really ultimately ended up being that it was Rosh Hashanah. So his scheme.
Unless they declared it Rosh Hashanah, how is it Rosh Hashanah? They still have to take it.
No, it becomes Rosh Hashanah when the witnesses come 2 minutes later and they're like, oh shoot, it actually is Rosh Hashanah.
They declare it Mekudash.
Right, they declare it Mekudash, exactly.
It happens by itself.
No, the Adam come and then the Rosh Beis Tum says Mekudash.
So they said the wrong Mizmor. So,
I mean, they took that very seriously. They were Yekis. If they say the wrong Megan, it's over.
It's over.
We don't do that. We say the same Shir Shal Yom. Right, we don't have a special Shir Shal Yom for Yontif. Okay, they had one. Hiskinu should. So what happened? They were Yakis.
Yes.
Hiskinu shelo yuhu mekablim esayedim ela adam mincha. So they didn't want this to happen again. So what happened is they made a rule: if the witnesses come before mincha, i.e., before the offering of the afternoon, so then today is Rosh Chodesh and Rosh Hashanah, and tomorrow is nothing. If the witnesses don't come until later in the afternoon, so we assume, even though it's not true, we assume that today is not Rosh Hashanah, and that tomorrow is Rosh Hashanah. In other words, even though witnesses are going to come very late in the day and say, today's the real day, doesn't matter. Once the time for mincha, once the time for the offering passes, once they sing, right, the Shir Shel Yom, and the witnesses have not come, so they say that tomorrow is also Rosh Hashanah. It happens to be that they finish out the day of, once they say tomorrow's Rosh Hashanah, that means that today's not Rosh Hashanah, but they don't operate like that. They still finish out the day and treat it holy also. Why? Because think about what will happen. Let's say they're treating the whole day like Rosh Hashanah, and then 5 minutes before the end of Rosh Hashanah, they're like, the witnesses didn't come, and therefore tomorrow's Rosh Hashanah, and today's not Rosh Hashanah. So what's going to happen? So next year, people are going to be like, I'm not treating this first day like Rosh Hashanah, because what's going to happen is the witnesses aren't going to come, and then it's going to be tomorrow, so I might as well just do work today. So they didn't want that, but let's say witnesses do come, so you're going to run into a problem. So basically what they did is they said that automatically the first day is always holy. If the witnesses come before mincha, then the first day is holy and the second day is not holy. And if the witnesses come after mincha, so even though really it should only be the first day, not the second day, it doesn't matter. We just say the second day is also holy. So therefore we're never going to ruin the Shir Shel Yom, because we're always, if the Edom came, so we sing the Shir Shel Yom of Rosh Hashanah. And if the Edom didn't come, we sing the Shir Shel Yom of Chol.
Didn't they just make a cutoff where they weren't mekabel all the witnesses after a certain...
Right, that's what they did, exactly. In other words, mincha, right, the time of the korban tam shel ben arbayim was the time of the afternoon offering was the cutoff point.
I mean, whether you can no longer bring it, or when you can bring it, you can bring it by...
Right, exactly. So let's... that's a good question. In other words, because there is a little bit of a time frame when you could bring the korban. It's not specifically at like one specific point. There's a window of how long you could bring it. Right, so I'm not sure. Let's just say they waited to the end of the last possible opportunity, because they didn't... That would probably make logical sense, that they waited to the last possible opportunity so that... Because they want, if the witnesses come, then they want tomorrow to be a weekday. So they're going to wait to the last possible opportunity. If the witnesses don't come, so then they say, today is really a weekday, even though they finish off the day being holy, for the reasons we said, and then tomorrow is also holy. Fine.
The mincha they're referring to is mincha katana, right?
So the mincha could be mincha gedola, but since we said logically, right, they're going to wait till mincha katana, right? Why? Because they want the latest possible thing. So that's why it's going to be mincha katana. But it doesn't. They didn't always offer the korban tamid shel ben arbaim was offered at different points. It wasn't always necessarily offered at the same time of the day, right?
Like Erev Pesach.
Right, Erev Pesach, exactly. So, okay, assumingly it's Mincha Katana because they want to wait till the last possible point to bring the Korban. Okay. So what do you see from here? So you basically see from here that Rosh Hashanah is always going to be, let's say nowadays, where their witnesses don't come. So witnesses aren't coming. So Rosh Hashanah is just one long holiness. Right? It's not like, in other words, they basically made a rule that if witnesses don't come, so today's holy and tomorrow's holy, and it's one long holiness.
Is that logical?
Why is it not logical?
We're just practicing it that way so people should keep it. But
so really, the Gemara is going to go right. So the Gemara is going to go into that. So Amar Rabba, mitakonos Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai ve'elach beitzah muteres. So what does Rabba say? So again, they people who are far away, even at the time of the Beis Hamikdash, people who are far away, They're always going to keep 2 days of Rosh Hashanah because they're always afraid that the witnesses did not come before Mincha. But they're keeping it not because of a suffix. They're keeping it because it was like a takana that if the witnesses don't come before Mincha, the second day is also holy. So they keep it as one long holiness. Therefore, an egg that is born on the first day of Rosh Hashanah is always going to be usher on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. So Rabbi says like this, Mitakanos Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai ve'elech beitza muteres. So Rabbi says we should change the rule and make it that an egg that's born on the first day of Rosh Hashanah becomes mutter on the second day of Rosh Hashanah based on the ruling of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Because what did he say? Ditnan, Mishachar beis hamitash hitkin Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai shiyu mekabim eidas hachorosh kol hayom. Why did they make this whole rule? Because of the Levim singing a song. That is only applicable when the Beis HaMikdash is around. Once the Beis HaMikdash is gone, then they technically could accept witnesses until 2 minutes before Shkia, right? Right before the day ends, they can still accept witnesses because who cares? They're not going to be singing the shir anyway. So once the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai made a rule that we can accept witnesses until the last possible second, right? So therefore, there's only going to be really one day of Rosh Hashanah, right? Because if witnesses come, even at the last possible second, today's Rosh Hashanah, and if witnesses don't come, that means that today wasn't Rosh Hashanah, tomorrow. So what do you see? So the people who are now far away, they're all still keeping 2 days, but they're not keeping it because of a takana. They're keeping it as a safi because they don't know which day was Rosh Hashanah, but there was really only one day of Rosh Hashanah. That means the egg that's born on the first day should be mutter, should be permitted on the second day. So this is actually hilarious. What happens, what the Gemara says right now. Amalei Abai, Baha Rav Shmuel Damar Chival Beitza Asura. So Abai says to Rabba, you're saying that there's a Mishnah that says that Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, you know, basically said that after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, there's only one day of Rosh Hashanah. So the people were keeping 2 days, it's only out of Safek, and therefore the egg should be mutter. But we have Amoraim who said that the egg should be usher on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. So I don't care what you say, Rabba, but the fact is that Rav and Shmuel said that the egg is usher on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. So then Rabba responds, the obvious response. Amarli Amina Lach Ano Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai the At Amarteli Rav Shmuel, right? I quoted Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. That's a Mishnah, right? That's a Tana. That's a Mishnah. You're quoting me Rav and Shmuel. It's like big deal. There's a famous like halacha or concept of the Taz. The Taz is a famous thing that basically anything that is mefurash that is for sure permitted in the Torah, so the Chacham cannot come later on and asser it, right? So it's a similar thing over here. There's an explicit Mishnah that says that I'm right. So you could say, Rav and Shmuel said the egg is usher on the second day. I don't care. There's an explicit Mishnah that says I'm right. Right? So you can't argue with the Mishnah.
Are there things where they asked things that would be permitted before?
Nothing.
Like, I don't know, Yeah. Or something. I don't know what's that.
Right, but it's not explicitly. There's no pasuk in the Torah that says that.
No, it is. That's exactly what I'm saying.
No, what I'm saying is that anything that is explicitly permitted in the Torah.
Permitted.
So they can't aser it. That's a rule. That the Taz has a chiddush in Yoredeya that anything that is explicitly permitted in the Torah, they can't aser later on.
You can't blow shofar on the first day of Rosh Hashanah if it's Shabbat, so.
Right, so there are people ask questions on the Taz, but I'm saying, like you said,
Sheva Tasa. That's a
right. There are questions, right? And people, maybe the answer is that it doesn't explicitly say that if it falls out on Rosh Hashanah, on Shabbos, that it's mutter, right? It only says if it falls on Rosh Hashanah, which Rosh Hashanah are we talking about? Is it Rosh Hashanah on Shabbos or not? Whatever, there are questions, but that's his rule. Okay, so Ulurav Shmuel Kasha, but then, okay, so fine, you can't ask a question on Rabbah who said that the egg should be mutter, because Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai said the egg, basically, based on his ruling, the egg should be mutter.
Did he have a beis din, Rav Yochanan?
Yeah, he had a beis din. He had a beis din,
so,
yeah.
So it's even stronger.
Also, we'll see, that's coming.
How do you know it's stronger? The older one is generally stronger than the new one.
So he's talking about the older one. Right, so that's what Baruch was talking about. Fine. So, but at the end of the day, why did Rav and Shmuel say it's usser? In other words, if there's a Mishnah, if there's Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai who says basically, that there's only really one day on Rosh Hashanah, and therefore the egg should be mutter, it should be permitted on the second day. Then how did Rav and Shmuel say it's usser? Right? The Rav and Shmuel kasha mas nisan. So we say lo kasha. It's not really a question. Halon v'haluhu. Right? So he says like this. So this is like it touches to the tricky. It's very, you know, the difference is very slight. In other words, okay, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai said that we accept witnesses the whole day, right? So that means the people in Israel will know for sure which day is the right day, right? So they know the first day, let's say the witnesses came 5 minutes before, so the first day is Rosh Hashanah, and the second day is not Rosh Hashanah, okay? So the egg for them is going to be mutter on the second day. The people in Galus, we always said keep 2 days. The question is why? Is it because it's a suffolk? Right? Is it a suffolk that they don't know what happened in Israel, so they have to just keep a second day, but really the second day is not really Yontif, so therefore the second day the egg should be mutter? Or is it no, they just made a gezerah that it's one long holiness?
So in this one,
in other words, basically you see them keeping 2 days. What's the reason they're keeping 2 days? So Rabbah will say, well, the reason they're keeping 2 days is because of the fact that it's just a suffolk. Right? So the egg should be mutter on the second day. And Abai will respond that the reason Rav and Shmuel said the egg is usher on the second day is because even though Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai made a new takana, that you should accept witnesses the whole day, right? So really the second day of Yontif should be mutter, of Rosh Hashanah should be mutter. It's like splitting hairs. When they made the Gezerah for people outside of Israel about Rosh Hashanah, they just made it like, whatever happens, it doesn't matter. It's always going to be one long day holiness for you. Even if they'll change it and they'll accept witnesses on the first day, the whole day, and therefore they'll know that the first day is Rosh Hashanah, the second day is not. It doesn't matter. We're just making a long-term thing that it's always 2 days holiness for you, and therefore the egg that's born on the first day is going to be also on the second day. The reason why it's so like that is because of the fact that you see them keeping 2 days, it's just like, what's the reason? So you're just speculating as to what the reason is. Okay. Fun. Rav Yosef Amar Af Mitakanas Rav Yochanan Ben Zakkai Ve'Elech Beitza Atzura. So Rav Yosef gives another reason. So again, Abaye said even though Rav Yochanan Ben Zakkai said that you accept witnesses the whole day after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, so therefore really it's only going to be one day Rosh Hashanah, either the first day if witnesses come, no matter what point, if they come, the first day is Rosh Hashanah, and if they don't come, then the second day was really Rosh Hashanah, and the egg therefore that's born on the first day should really be mutter on the second day. So Abai said it's usher because they just made a gezerah, right? That no matter what, it's 2 days of holiness for you people in Chutz La'aretz, and therefore the egg can always be usher on the second day of Yontif. That's one answer. Rav Yosef says, no. Af mitakanas Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai ve'elech beitza asura. My time, this is what you were saying, Baruch, havi davar shebeminin v'chol davar shebeminin sarach minin acher lahatiro. So he says like this. He says, when they initially, at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, when they said the second day is Aser, right? They made that Gezerah that if witnesses do not come until after Mincha, right? So automatically we have 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, right? If witnesses come before Mincha, so then there's 1 day of Rosh Hashanah. But if witnesses come after Mincha, then there's 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. And people in Chutz La'aretz either way keep 2 days because they don't know what's happening, right? And they're keeping 2 days according to this view, not because of the fact that it's a suffolk, because they don't know what's happening. It's because they don't know what's happening, we make a rule that no matter what, they have to keep 2 days, but not because of a suffolk, but rather because of Kedusha Achas. Right? So, when they made that rule, so that was a Dover Shebe Minyan. In other words, sages got together and said that people in Chutz La'aretz, they always keep 2 days of Rosh Hashanah as one long holiness. And therefore, the egg that's born on the first day is always going to be forbidden on the second day. So there's a rule that anything that's a darish shivim minyan that sages came together, the only way you can get rid of that is by having sages come together again.
Of a greater minyan.
Right. So, since sages never came together and permitted the egg again, because the egg was forbidden on the second day, so therefore the egg is going to still be aser. The obvious question on this is, yes, but Rav Yochanan and Zakkai and friends said that we're going to change the rule about the witnesses coming. Once they change the rule, that means that you're keeping a second day not because it's one long holiness, but because of the fact that they don't know. Therefore, the egg should be muttered. So that's what the Gemara asks on the next page. But right now, the assumption is that they made a rule. People in Chutz Laaretz keep 2 days of Rosh Hashanah no matter what. It's one long holiness, right? And therefore, the egg is always going to be usher on the second day. And therefore, even though when the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, it's not necessarily applicable anymore, the egg's still usher.
So, you sure they didn't say also the Yom Tov?
Right. So we'll see.
This minyan didn't also talk about the Yom Tov of Pesach.
So they did talk about it, and that's what the Gemara's question is. Basically, is that once they get rid of the rule that you can't accept witnesses, basically means that only one day is Rosh Chodesh, right? Only one day is Rosh Hashanah. So then, really, it's not one long kedusha. It's really a suffix. So therefore, the egg should also be mutter. I'm saying that's going to be the question of the Gemara on the next page.
But if they made the same concept of applicable to the Shalosh Regalim, the way they did for Rosh Hashanah, I mean, wouldn't we, we'd be obligated to...
Right, so they didn't... I didn't understand what you were saying before. I got it. No, because the difference between Rosh Hashanah and all the other days is that Rosh Hashanah falls out on Rosh Chodesh, right? In other words, there was no time for them to know. In other words, the other places, they had more time to figure it out. Here, they had no time to figure it out.
So we're saying now that the egg is in Eretz Yisrael, the egg would be mutter, and the Chutz Laaretz, the egg
would be aser. Yeah. Okay, so let's just do a little bit more. So the Gemara says, "Amar of Yosef mina mina las." This is just a tangential side point of how do you, once sages come together and make a rule that's called a davar shebeminyan, that sages came together and voted on something. How do we know that the only way you get rid of that is by having a new group of sages come together and say we're getting rid of that? How do we know that? There's a few proofs. First off, there's a pasuk. Right? So Hashem says, after Har Sinai, tell the people to go and return to their tents. We're going to explain what this means shortly. And another pasuk. Another pasuk says that after Har Sinai, once the shofar blows, they're allowed to go back onto the mountain. Because we know they weren't allowed to go on the mountain during the giving of the Torah. And another proof, we're going to explain all these proofs in a second. Mitanya Karen Ravai Haya Ola Yerushalayim Mahalach Yom Echad the Chosad. So it's like this. We know that there's a concept in the Torah of Meiser Sheni, right? Meiser Sheni is a tithe you take off, and what do you do with that tithe? You bring it to Jerusalem and you eat it there, right? Now, by Meiser Sheni, let's say you don't want to bring all your fruit because you have a billion fruit and it's very annoying. So what you could do is you could redeem it onto money, yeah, and bring the money there and then buy food in Jerusalem. Now, there's another thing called Kerem Revai, right? The first 3 years of a tree being planted, the tree's fruit is usher because of Orla, right? That you're not allowed to enjoy the fruit for the first 3 years. In the fourth year, the fruit has the status of basically Meiser Sheni. It's the same thing. That you take that fruit and you bring it to Jerusalem and you eat it in Jerusalem, right? So you would think, since it's similar to Meiser Sheni, the rule should be, just like Meiser Sheni, you don't have to bring the actual fruit, you just redeem it onto coins and bring the coins. So to Kerem Revai, the vineyard in the fourth year, its fourth year of fruit, you don't have to bring the fruit itself, you have to bring, you redeem the fruit onto money, bring the money to Jerusalem and use it to buy stuff.
That's only for Kerem.
It's about Chokas. Neto Revai, Kerem Revai. Yeah, exactly. So, okay. So, but that's not exactly true. They made a rule that people who are within 1 day's journey of Jerusalem cannot redeem their Kerem Revai, the fruit of the vineyard of the fourth year. They have to bring the fruit itself. Why? Because they want Jerusalem to have the fruits of the local populace there, because it's a beautiful thing that they bring all their fruits. It looks so nice. So you're not allowed to redeem it within 1 day's journey. In other words, if you're far away, fine. So you could redeem and bring money. If you're close, yeah, you really should be able to redeem it, but we made a takana midir rabbanu, we made a rabbinical decree that those people, right, cannot redeem their fruit, they have to bring the fruit itself. What's a one-day walk from Jerusalem in all the directions? So, Zui Tchuma, this is the one-day walk. So, a lot, min hatzafon. It's really obviously be elat min hadorum, right? That's why it changes it. Elat, as we all know, is not in the north of Israel; it's in the south. So it changes it. So elat min hadorum. So elat is apparently a 1 day walk from Jerusalem, right? It's not necessarily the same elat. Right,
that's probably not in Israel either. So.
Right. Well, there are a lot. Yeah, yes. That's what they say. Maybe right. Akravas mina Safon, and Akravas some other cities in the north is 1 day walk. Lud, Ben Gurion Airport mina Marav, right. So that's to the
not
west.
Sure about that either.
Okay, agreed. That was just a sticky thing.
Besides,
I was saying.
Besides, it's uphill. I think both directions.
Yeah, but Arlan, Karen, it applies to Chutz La'aretz also. Doesn't matter if it's
well, Kamar Avai doesn't apply to Chutz
La'aretz.
Yeah. Kamar Avai doesn't apply because it's the same thing basically as Mr. Shaney.
The procedure, just as an aside, yeah. if your tree yields 100 apples or other fruits.
Yeah. So for Kamar Avai, no, it's not 10, it's the whole thing. It's the whole thing. No, Meiser Shaney, there's a certain amount.
Oh.
Right? Kamar Avai means. The first 3 years, every single fruit in the vineyard is awesome. You can't eat it. The fourth year, all the fruit has a status of Kamar Avai. That means that it's the whole fruit is basically like Meister Shaney. The whole fruit,
so
not
you
a
have
portion.
To hire a caravan to carry
right.
this stuff.
Right. So if you're far away, you just say, okay, I have $10,000 worth of fruit. I redeem it up to $10,000 and bring it to Jerusalem and eat it. All that money. Right? If you're close, you have to bring the fruit itself. Okay, so what's the boundaries? Again, Lud min Amarav, Lud to the west. The Yarden mina Mizrach and the Jordan River to the east. What's the reason that these people can't redeem their fruit and have to bring the fruit itself? So that the marketplaces of Jerusalem will have local produce because it's very nice. So this is a little bit of a story. So there's a brisa that says that Rabbi Eliezer had a vineyard that was in its fourth year. Right? That was Bimizrach Lud. It was to the east of Lud, next to this village called Tavi. Since it's to the east of Lud, it means it's within 1 day's walk of Jerusalem. It's within the boundary of the 1 day's walk. So he should have to bring the fruit. But he had a lot of fruit. So he didn't want to bring the fruit. So what did he want to do? Ubakish afkir lanim. So he decided, let me just make it hefker. The poor people will come. Each one will take a little bit of fruit. They'll all bring it to Jerusalem and they'll all eat it there. Amrulol Tamidav, so his students said to him, Rabbi Kfar Nimnu Alecha Chaverecha Vitiruhu. So they said, you don't need to do that. Why? Because the rule that you have to bring it to Jerusalem, the fruit, if it's in within a 1 day walk, what's the point of that? To make Jerusalem look nice. If Jerusalem is destroyed, is it going to look nice if you bring your fruit? Who cares? It's not going to look nice. So since the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, so they got rid of the rule that you have to bring the fruit itself if you're in a 1 day walk. In other words, before when the Beis HaMikdash was around and Jerusalem was very nice, so within a 1 day walk, you have to bring the fruit itself. Once the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, right, the implication obviously of this Gemara is that even though the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the rule of Kamar Avai still applies. You still have to bring it to Jerusalem. So you don't need to bring the fruit itself. Jerusalem looks horrible, it's destroyed. So just bring money. So you don't need to pull this scheme and make your fruit ownerless and let the poor people take it to Jerusalem, just redeem it. So man chaverecha, who are the people who are his friends of Rabbi Eliezer, who said that you don't have to, who got rid of the original decree? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, right? So what's the implication? Time of dinimnu halo nimulo. So it's like this. Why was it that Rabbi Eliezer could redeem it onto money? There was a decree, they said. They made a rule. Sages got together and made a rule. If you're in 1 day's journey, you have to bring the fruit itself. Right? Then what happens afterwards? They say that once the Beis HaMikdash are destroyed, they have to get together and officially say, even when you're in 1 day's journey, you don't have to bring the fruit anymore. But isn't that obvious? Of course it's obvious. Because what's the whole point of the reasoning of bringing the fruit is so Jerusalem looks nice. But Jerusalem's not going to look nice anyway. So obviously from the fact that they still had to get together, even though it was logical that they should get rid of the decree, because there's no point of bringing the fruit to Jerusalem. Jerusalem doesn't look nice. You don't need to bring fruit. From the fact they still had to get together, it shows that once they make a decree with people, with sages, they have to, the only way you get rid of that, even though the reason doesn't apply anymore, is by having sages come together. Quickly, two more things, right? We gave two other proofs, right? My ve'omer. So what is ve'omer? So that was one of the proofs we gave, right? The proof was We'll see the two proofs. Let's read them. Hachikamer, Michti, let's see. Ksiv hayu nechon l'sholshos yamim al tikshu elisha. So the pasuk says before Har Sinai, before the giving of the Torah, don't have relations with a woman for 3 days before Har Sinai, so that you don't run into problems of impurity. What happens after Har Sinai? The obvious assumption should be it's over. So therefore, you could have relations. You don't need to officially say you could have relations. So why does God say you have to have relations? What that you're allowed to? Leich emor lam shuvu lachem lo leichem labali. Why does Hashem have to say officially now you're allowed to have relations again? So shma mina kol davar shibim minin sarach minin achir latir. So just like when with human beings, once they have a group of people come together and make a decree, even though the reasoning doesn't apply anymore, you still have to have the group come together again and officially annul it. So too with God. God says, before Har Sinai, don't have relations for 3 days. So even though that rule doesn't apply anymore, because Har Sinai is over, Hashem officially has to say, it's mutter.
Interesting.
So then the Gemara says, but that's not necessarily a full proof. But maybe that's not what it really means. Maybe it's obvious that it's mutter, you have relations, to have relations. What's God saying? It's saying, like engage in relations. In other words, do the mitzvah of having relations. In other words, it's not that he's saying it's permitted. It's obvious it's permitted because Har Sinai is over. He's saying, you know, don't be so engrossed in learning. You just got a Torah. Don't be so engrossed in learning. Make sure that you remember your wives. So that's why the Gemara quoted a second pasuk, which teaches us the same rule, right? Tashma. That's why he quoted another pasuk, b'masha chayov al hema yale bahar, right? Because the Gemara quoted before two pasukim. Why do you have to quote two pasukim? The proof could be from one pasuk. The answer is because the first pasuk is not a full proof. So what's the second proof from the other pasuk? The pasuk says, Hashem said what? Michti ksiv gamatzon v'bakar ayuru al moaharhu. Right, b'meshach ayov alam lishma mina davar shemini tzarich minin achel latiro. Right, so what was this? So as Hashem said, during Har Sinai, no one's allowed to go on the mountain. Right, so once Har Sinai is over, it's obvious you're allowed to go on the mountain. So what does God have to say when Har Sinai is over? When the shofar ends, you're allowed to go on the mountain. It's obvious you're allowed to. The ceremony is over. So obviously, you see that on a deoraisa level, that or at least by God, that once God says something, He has to officially annul it, even though the reason doesn't apply anymore.
How does it seem like from Hashem fall into the category of davarship of minyan?
No, so I guess it's if God has to re-annul, so then for sure us also have to do it, right? So that's what the Gemara says. Basically, let's just read the last thing. So maybe that's only with God, right? God, when God says something, even though the reason doesn't apply, well, He has to officially say that I'm getting rid of it. Maybe with sages, once the reason doesn't apply anymore, the decree shouldn't apply anymore. So Tashma comes the proof from Kerem Revai that they officially, Rabbi Yochanan and Zaka and Chaverov, had to get together and say you don't have to bring the fruit anymore, even though the reason didn't apply, right? But Kerem Revai Rabbanim, Kerem Revai Kfar Nemno Olav Chavecha V'Yitiru, right?
But the same thing would be with the Benoach. I think Kodesh Baruch Hu had to tell them it's okay to.
Right. That's exactly. That would be another proof. That's good. Right. So again, the Gemara ends off by saying, why do you have to bring the proof from Kerem Revai that even though the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed, right, you would think that you still have to bring the fruit. Why would you think that? You don't need to bring the fruit anymore. The Beis Hamikdash is destroyed. Jerusalem's destroyed. The whole point of bringing the fruit is to make the city look nice. So you logic dictates you don't have to bring the fruit. So therefore, the Gemara brought a proof from this case to show that not only by God, also by sages, once they make a rule, even though the reasoning doesn't apply anymore, you still have to get together and officially say, yeah, the reasoning doesn't apply anymore, and we're officially saying, therefore, that that you don't have to bring the fruit anymore, and you're allowed to bring money, right? But if they didn't say that, even though the reasoning wouldn't apply, it would still be usher for you to bring money. So there's two interesting shilas that I saw, just in general. So one would be, we say in Maariv, right, Baruch Hashem Lalom Amen V'Amen, right? So what's the reason? Why do we say that? So we say that because of the fact that they used to daven in the fields, and it was dangerous, right, they basically wanted everyone to walk home together. So, but now we daven in a shul, so there's no real reasoning of that. So the question was, there was a whole Shiloh, basically, now the reasoning doesn't apply, so should we say that you don't have to say that anymore?
So there are some people who...
Right, so basically, the Igros Moshe, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, no, based on this Gemara, right? You see that, yeah, the reasoning doesn't apply, but there was no official group of sages who got together and said that it's mutter, right? And therefore, it's still going to be, it's still going to, that it's mutter not to say it, so it's, you're still going to have to say it.
So why does Svartim come?
So the Igros Moshe addresses that, and he says really what they did wasn't necessarily fully correct, but once they started doing it, since logic dictates that we really shouldn't say it anymore, right? So we're not going to officially tell you that you don't have to say it anymore because based on this Gemara. But if you're going to, you go ahead and do it and create a minhag that you're already not saying it. So then once you're doing it, that's really logical that you shouldn't be saying it. So then you should continue in your minhag.
People are still coming late tomorrow.
Yeah, that.
I'm sorry, I don't know what's saying what.